powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Oh, gosh.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Happy Tuesday, you guys. Welcome into Curtis and Stacy. Jake Heaps filling in for Curtis Rogers today.
Wow. I knew. That was what I was going to walk into
back.
Today.
We're all reunited. It's been forever.
It has been forever.
Both Curtis and I and the listeners were wondering if we'd ever see you again.
Well, there was a time, Stacy, that as I was on the Big Island in Hawaii, where I thought to myself, you know,
this feels pretty good.
It does. It does feel really good. And the sun is beating down on you when you're on the out at the ocean, on the beach, and at the pool. And, man, we were having a great time as a family. It was awesome. It was really, really good to get some rest and recover and rejuvenate and all that. But I am back.
I'm glad you're back.
A couple of big things happened while I was gone.
Just a bit. I mean, I feel like the awful babysitter that's like negligent that was watching things when you were gone. And I'm like, look, listeners, everything was fine, right? Everything was fine. You guys were all happy.
Trying to put the furniture back the way it was before the parents get home.
Exactly. No,
Tell them it was good.
We did have a couple big things happen. We had obviously the signing of Alden Smith and since then an arrest warrant for Alden Smith. It's been a quick turnaround with that one. You've also had a string of phenomenal games from the Seattle Mariners. They've now won, excluding their ongoing series, all but one of their series, losing that one series to the Chicago White Sox. Everything else has been fantastic. In fact, we've got some matinee baseball today. The Mariners pregame show starts in 1 hour, so a short show. And Jake's return, get a little bit of an acclimation back into the show for you. We're going for a sweep of the World Series champs. Kyle Lewis back in the lineup. He'll be in the two spot. Ty France taking some time off for that injured forearm. Marco Gonzalez going to get the start. And Mariners manager Scott Servais will be joining us in about 10 minutes.
Yes, he will.
We have plenty of questions for him. So because so much of the show today is going to be getting you guys ready for the Mariners, I do want to take just 10 minutes here to squeeze in some talk about Alden Smith before we bring Scott on. Jake, this is especially great since we finally have you back to talk about it. We haven't had a chance to talk to you about it. So as you guys know, the Seahawks signed Alden Smith to reportedly a one-year deal. We're all assuming it's a veteran minimum contract. Although then on Saturday, he was allegedly involved in an altercation with a man outside of a coffee shop in St. Bernard Parish in New Orleans, Louisiana. There's an arrest warrant out for him right now. The Seahawks have released a statement saying they're aware of the allegations. So let's circle this back around, Jake. If the Hawks have to move on, what does it mean? How does it affect the team?
First off, I mean, this is a whirlwind, right? When they first announced the Alden Smith signing, I was sitting there at the pool going, you've got to be kidding me. This is a move where the Seahawks are just doubling, tripling down on pass rush, and they mean business in terms of really solidifying a pass rush that can get after the quarterback and you know, going through all the steps of what it means. And I thought at the time that, man, this could be a really good signing if you are able to maintain and keep that group together, and also what is Alden Smith's role going to be. I am of the firm belief, guys, that Alden Smith was going to be used like a Swiss Army knife, that he was going to play all across the defensive line, and it gave your group amazing flexibility because he could play Leo. He could play the five technique. He could even play Sam linebacker for you, and that might be the move that signals that the Seahawks are maybe willing to go on without KJ Wright back. And I know that there's a lot of people that have that question almost every day. Where's KJ Wright going to be? And Alden Smith could have been that signing that meant that that door was closed. So with that now being turned around and flipped on his head after, you know, you have this Alden Smith signing go awry, now that he is alleged to have literally be choking a man outside of a coffee shop, which just blows my mind. Now you're in a situation where the details of this, it doesn't sound great. And innocent until proven guilty, there's history there with Alden Smith, and there's supposed video evidence. There's a warrant out for his arrest. So signs don't look good right now. And if they are going down a path, Stacey, where they have to indeed release Alden Smith because he is proven guilty in this situation, where does that leave them? I believe that leaves them in a position where they have to reevaluate what they truly want. And I believe that number one priority for them is to really, truly build a legitimate pass rushing depth that is Super Bowl contending worthy. And if that is the case, then I believe that there are maybe other targets that they could go after in free agency. But it also could mean that, hey, we tried to go for the home run, the slam dunk situation. It didn't work out for us. So let's bring back KJ Wright. This might be the move that, or the situation that ends up opening the door back up to KJ. And I'm going to be fascinated to see what the road is for this team if they do indeed have to move on from him.
I mean, it certainly makes the pass rush battle a more interesting one. And, you know, I'll say this. Alden Smith, would losing him affect your pass rush? Yeah. As in, could bringing Alden Smith in and having him play make your pass rush better? The answer would have been yes. Do I think it's as significant as losing Carlos Dunlap, as losing even like a Kerry Hyder? I don't. And I think that a lot of people will look to Alden Smith's rookie season and his second season in the league. They're going to see 14 sacks and 19 sacks, and they're going to say, wow, what a ceiling this guy has. And you're right. He has an incredibly high ceiling. He had 5 sacks for Dallas last year. 3 of them came in week 3 against the Seattle Seahawks, and his production kind of tailed off toward the second half of the season. He had a great fumble return for, I think, 78 yards against Cincinnati. Fantastic game for him. Otherwise, he got a little more quiet. So I think the expectation that he was going to come in and do dramatic things for you, I think, like, hit pause on that just yet. I'm not saying he can't. Like, his ceiling is clearly higher than many defensive ends you've seen here. There was a time when he was, like, a premier edge rusher in the league. That was also a couple years ago. He's had nearly 5 full years out of football, was good for Dallas last year, really could have brought you something, especially as part of a rotation and not a full-time starter. No question could have brought you something. I think instead what I look at is it's almost a good thing that something like this happens now, where as a team you either decide to hang on to Alden Smith and work through whatever issues he's having or whatever allegations he's facing, or you decide to release him. And it's better that that happened right now and you figure out how to move forward than it is that this happened in week 4 of the season when you've already released a defensive end or someone else to make room for Alden on your roster, and then this happens.
It's a great point. It's a fantastic point. And that is, thinking on the negative side of things, is that this does end up turning out to be that he is guilty of what he is being accused of, and that the team does have to cut ties and move on in the offseason. It gives you an opportunity to recover. And I don't think this sets them back entirely, right? They weren't banking on Alden Smith to be their leading pass rusher, to be the guy that that is going to be the focus point or the focal point. Carlos Dunlap was that guy. Alden Smith was brought in to be in addition to. And as I said before the Alden Smith signing, they already have the best pass rushing depth that they have had since 2013. This was just almost kind of a cherry on top situation. And I think there's other guys out there in the market right now that you could look at and add to this rotation and take a chance on and see how it ends up unfolding for you. You might not be able to look at it and say, man, this is going to be the exact same production or be as excited about the upside of the signing. But I think there's good quality players out there right now that I think could come in and fill that void potentially for you. But I think that more so than anything else, Stacey, I look back at some of the situations that the Seahawks have found themselves in with guys
best ready.
With guys with questionable backgrounds, guys like Josh Gordon, Quentin Dunbar. Now you add Alden Smith. They haven't necessarily hit the trifecta in a positive way there.
Right.
And that to me is something where you just kind of had bad luck in terms of it's not.
Well,
luck.
All of them have been risks.
You know what you're getting yourself into.
Yes, you've gambled each time.
You've gambled each time and you've lost. And in that regard, you haven't had the luck in terms of it working out positively for you. And my question is, do you continue to keep dipping your toe in the water in those situations mm-hmm. down the road mm-hmm. based off of recent history? Or do you always take those chances knowing that there might be high risk but high reward in those situations, believing that your organization can get you the best out of those situations?
The Hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. I'm Stacey Ross. Jake Heaps is back from vacation. Curtis Rogers, obviously, here still on the board right now. Now, normally, during the first hour, we're joined by Mike Salk, brought to you by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer. But we've got a replacement today that I think you guys will really enjoy. It's the Scott Service Show. Skip, thanks for joining us. It was quite a night for Dylan Moore and Taylor Trammell yesterday.
Well, they certainly did play well. We made a number of awesome defensive plays last night to help out our pitching. You know, Evan White continues to dazzle at first base, the catch of the pop-up, picking the dirt. You can't say enough about the play that Dylan Moore made, you know, right when they had the rally going there in the seventh inning to end that threat. And nice double play to end the game. So a lot of good defensive stuff out there. And, you know, Taylor Trammell with the couple big hits, the homer and the double yesterday. And it's kind of funny, he had seen their pitcher, Dustin May, quite a bit, you know, at the minor league level, and he'd always had success against them, and it paid off, and it translated into a nice ball game last night.
Scott, when you're taking on a team like the Dodgers, who are kind of in a place where the Dodgers are right now, I think the key to having a chance to win is simple. You don't make mistakes. You got to pitch well, and then somebody's got to come up with a run somewhere. And you guys did all of that last night, and it really occurred to me after the game that late last year, you had a series with the Dodgers. And while I think it was you took one game out of the three-game series, this team was competitive in all three games with them. And it really stood out to me that, hey, this is a great sign that they can play with these guys. Now to see them come into T-Mobile Park, I was just kind of curious, how much of that is a continuation of the process and what things have you seen that they have been able to move forward that kind of puts you where you are right now?
Yeah, you make a good point, Shannon. You know, we played the Dodgers. We played two in L.A. and then two back at our place last year. And we were right in all the games. I think we might have been leading three out of the four games at one point. Just weren't able to hold their offense down. But, yeah, it was a good sign for us last year. We were playing, and it kind of started the turn right at that series. Even though we didn't win the series against the Dodgers, we started playing better in that series and then throughout the rest of the season. And guys started to gain confidence anytime you're playing. I mean, the players know. Obviously, it's a very, very good team over there. You know, they went on to win the World Series last year. We've been playing good ball. So to come in last night and kind of jump on them early, I thought the Marmolejos home run was huge there in the first inning. It's kind of a nice little confidence boost. It gets the momentum going. And it was nice. Nice ball game. But you hit on it earlier. You know, when you're playing good teams like that, you really do defense and control the free bases. That's one thing. We did get a little lucky last night. We walked a couple guys at inopportune times and hit a couple batters, but we were able to work through it.
Scott, you talked through some of those adversity moments, hitting a couple batters, walking a couple batters, getting guys on base, and yet your guys in the bullpen and defensively, you guys were able to get yourselves out of a jam. How pivotal are moments like that in terms of building confidence for the future?
No, it really is important, and you're going to hit those points throughout almost every game, and certainly, you know, when you have young starting pitching, you know, it's going to happen. You have a bad inning, or, you know, you don't execute there on a, you know, a sequence of four, five, six pitches, and you look up, you got a couple guys on base, and now you got to really work through it. But our bullpen has been just fantastic. They, for me, off to they're kind of the unsung hero of what we've done so far early in this season. You know, we've got some guys. They have come from different backgrounds. We've acquired a few of them through trade. A couple of them came through our system, Rule 5 pick. So that's kind of how bullpens are put together, but you never know how they're going to gel. And they've done an outstanding job coming in, attacking the strike zone, and they've all got really good secondary pitches. So the strikeout is starting to play in it for us, and it's really important. You come out of the bullpen, you got to have a pitch to strike them out once in a while.
Scott, you talked about early on in the season, and Jerry talked about it as well, in that you felt that the bullpen was going to be okay. You know, the bullpen's coming out of spring training. You're never quite sure what you have. You watch relievers in spring training. That sometimes can be downright scary. But what has really, really jumped out at me is, and I don't think that we have seen this at all in recent years, is once this bullpen got going, it's no longer looking down there and saying, who's available? Who do you feel good about? I look at it 1 through 8. I think you probably feel good about absolutely everybody in there right now.
I really do, and I think it's been a byproduct of giving everybody an opportunity to pitch in meaningful game. And it could be, in the sixth inning with a couple guys on. It could be to getting through a tough spot in the lineup in the eighth inning. Everybody has contributed, and that's what good bullpens have, because there's going to be days like today where you're going to have a few guys down. You need to give them a breather, and you can't go to them, so you need other guys to step up. And we've been able to handle those days, and you know, it's a great confidence boost. It's kind of the team within the team, and that small unit cohesion that exists with the bullpen is so important. As those guys, they spend all their time together. They hang out down there, the stories that go on, and they get to know each other, and all of a sudden, boom, they're in the game. So we've got a lot of the camaraderie amongst that group is very, very strong.
Kendall Graveman seems to be full reliever right now. Behind the scenes, do you see something different with his personality, or is he any different along those lines?
Yeah, it's been a transition for him. Kendall is a leader by nature. He's a guy that likes to pull guys along with him, and you know, he's in a position now. He's still learning. You know, how quick can he bounce back? How much throwing does he do before the game? You know, how much throwing does he do warming up before he comes into the game? So, you know, as he continues to learn. And what works for him, he's only going to get better, I believe, as the season goes along. And, you know, that leadership part of it, he's been a big guy down there, kind of pulling that group together, understanding that there are nights that one of the guys in the bullpen have to pick up a different guy in the bullpen. It was maybe off a little bit, and so far they've been able to do that.
Scott, one big piece that has been missing from this roster has been Kyle Lewis. Is he set to make his season debut tonight or today?
Kyle Lewis is in the lineup today, folks.
All right.
Your reigning American League Rookie of the Year will hit second in the lineup tonight, or today. Unfortunately, Ty France is going to be out of today's game, and he's a little sore, obviously, by getting hit by about a 95-mile-an-hour fastball last night in the forearm, so thought best to give him a day. So Kalu is back in the lineup. He'll be in center field tonight or today, and then we'll slide Taylor Trammell over to left field.
Scott, how much does that mean for your club to have him back?
Well, it means a lot. Certainly an outstanding season last year. And he's really missed it, you know, not being a part of what we're doing. It's really solid. He's a great player, but he's really a great teammate. He likes being in the middle of it all and on the field, in the clubhouse, you know, whatnot. So get an opportunity to get him out there. He feels really, really good. I'm glad we did out rush him back. We gave him time to progress along, and I'm looking forward to seeing him out there. And you know, now we got to keep him healthy the rest of the year.
Scott, I just got back from vacation. I was just curious, what is your vacation spot? If you have anywhere to pick in your off season, where is it? Where are you going?
That's a good question. You know, I lived in Colorado for a long time, and my wife and I and our kids, we love to ski. So it's usually a ski trip somewhere.
Okay.
This last year, we were able to get over to Big Sky, Montana, and over to Jackson Hole a little bit. Started skiing up here in the Pacific Northwest. Unfortunately, you can't get up to Whistler with the COVID stuff, but that's one of our favorite places as well. So we love to ski, and kind of not just in the States, but we've had a chance to take a couple trips over to Europe. It's been fantastic.
Now, it sounds like if France is only going to rest a day or two, he may not make an IL stint. Is that right?
No, Ty will be okay. There's nothing, you know, he's got a bad bruise in his arm, and it's on his throwing arm. But even to, you know, get him in there in DH, I'm hopeful. You know, we'll stay away from today. We've got a day off tomorrow. I would suspect that he could get back in the lineup when we get over to Boston.
Scott, I should ask you, what will the lineup be then? Because that's what you would be expecting.
Shannon, you love the lineup challenge every day.
It's our brand.
I think the two hole is a good spot for Mr. France. And, you know, Kalu's in there today in the two hole, but Ty will go back in the two hole, and then we'll start lengthening our lineup after that. So those guys at the top three, you know, Haney, Ty, and Siegs have just been great.
Now, Scott, one of the things that I've been really, really impressed just over the years as you've managed this club and even going through the rebuilding processes, your teams have played good, clean baseball. There have been very few, you know, knucklehead errors made out there running the bases or out there fielding. What is that attributed to? Do you guys put a special emphasis? Is that something you take tremendous pride in? Have you guys been fortunate to find guys like Evan White and J.P. Crawford? What has the process been like for you from day one in regards to that particular area?
It's a combination of both, quite frankly. You know, as we look to kind of shift our roster to younger, more athletic players, you know, those guys, they can make more plays on the field. They have more range. They throw a little bit better. You see what, you know, Evan's been able to do at first base and what that does in picking up your entire infield. So, you know, having the personnel certainly means a lot. But I think on the flip side of that as well, you know, putting a priority on the defense, you know, you're still going to make errors. Errors happen. But you don't want to see the mental errors, you know, when we throw to the wrong base or we don't keep the double play in order, we miss the cutoff man, you know, we don't handle bunts well, things like that. Those, for me, are mental mistakes, which, you know, when they're giving you an out, you got to take it. And that's the one thing I think we've done a lot better. And the same thing on the bases. You know, you got 27 outs to play with. You don't want to give up too many of them on the bases. And I think our guys have done a good job with that as well. So we talk about it a lot, but at the end of the day, it's driven by personnel and the credit to our players. And they take the defensive part of the game seriously. Sometimes just use the defensive part of the game. Just that's just a stopgap until I get my next at bat. Our guys don't look at it that way. Mm.
It was such a huge part of last night's game too. And what was so remarkable is it was you know, players that all started the game in one spot, one in a bench, one at second base, all of a sudden at different spots. And I think that just speaks to the depth that you have. You always talk about depth and you talk about the bats, but that defense is important as well. And I got to imagine probably the happiest person last night in the dugout was Perry Hill.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Perry's on top of it. These guys all the time. And, you know, the thing that goes unnoticed, you think about the double play that ended the ball game. Sam Haggerty's in at second base. You know, he's played some second in his minor league career, but obviously hasn't played much at all for us this year at second. But the ground ball that was hit, you know, as he catches it, he doesn't really pivot his feet. He just kind of does the quarterback option pitch play. And that's a long way to pitch that ball. If you remember the play, JP's waiting for it to get to him, you know, so he can quickly turn the double play. And that is a play that our guys practice every day in infield. Flipping that ball without shifting your feet and putting enough on it so you can keep the double, you know, make the double play happen. So, you know, that for me and those type of things, it kind of goes under the radar, but those are the things that Perry Hill just drives him. He loves it. And our players respond. And when they perform in the game like that, it's just so gratifying to everybody involved.
Skip, thanks so much for taking the time. We love talking to you and appreciate you joining us ahead of this matinee finale against the Dodgers. Good luck today. Let's go get this series win.
Sounds good. Sweep would be great, right?
Absolutely.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, guys.
I always like saying, let's go get this series win,
because
it makes me feel athletic. Like, it makes me feel like it's like, all right, let's get out there, and then I, like, go sit down.
See you on the field, Scott.
Yeah, see you on the field. Let me head to my couch.
Stacy just got herself into the dugout. Like,
yeah,
she's there.
Yes. Yeah.
You're part of the team.
All I'm saying is if they need – I know that you have, like – assistant manager, blah, blah, blah. If you need someone else to just get everyone fired up and ready to go, I could be that person. I'm just saying.
So like, you're subliminally, as we're going through our interviews, slowly working your way onto the field.
I'm going to start saying we more often. It's tricking myself into thinking that I am one of the players.
Scott Service just looking at and just thinking to himself, like, what?
I know.
What's going on?
Speaking of last night's game, Curtis has a great question for us. Here's the question. We're going to get to it in a second. On the list of incredibly frustrating viewing experiences in sports, where does watching an umpire with an awful strike zone rank? That's next in three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
Question number one on the list of incredibly frustrating viewing experiences in sports. Where does last night and what was his name? Chad something or other, the home plate umpire. Where does a bad strike zone rank in terms of frustrating viewing experiences?
When it's your team that feels like they're getting bad calls up there, when their calls going in your favor once in a while, it eases it up a bit. I would say it's pretty up there, though. Any missed calls don't happen in a football game as frequently as bad calls will happen for a bad strike zone. You know what I mean? Like, that'll pop its head up throughout the course of a game. Whereas, it's harder to get away with really bad calls in an NFL game over and over and over. And I know people are saying, well, hey, there's a Super Bowl I'd like to tell you about.
The thing is if an umpire is consistent with his strike zone throughout the night, like, even if it's not in the televised box, you can live with it. Because, like, okay, well, that's just how he's calling the game, right? and everybody can adjust and everybody can figure it out. But last night, there was no rhyme or reason to the calls that we were witnessing last night. And in terms of rank, I think it is right there for me. It is right there at the top in terms of frustrating viewing experience as it is to see the shift. I hate the shift. I hate it, and I can't express that enough.
Yeah.
Just watching the shift to me just kind of kills the game for me, kills the viewing experience for me. I can't stand when an umpire is unbelievably inconsistent with his balls and strikes calls. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think a close second, or maybe even taking the cake would be a lot of flags on one play when it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Like, think in the NFL, you're watching a team's final drive. They're not going to win it. They don't have a chance to win it. There's a minute left in play, and there's a flag on every play, and they have to keep redoing it. And it's like, just end it, bro. Like, there's no way that they are winning this game. Just end it. Stop throwing flags. Curtis, what about you?
It doesn't get much worse than what we saw last night. That was nails on a chalkboard in terms of just annoyance. Chad Whitson was the home plate umpire last night. Thank the Lord he is not back there again tonight, because that was brutal. I would put that up there probably as my most frustrating viewing experience, because bring in the robot umps. You're telling me a computer-generated strike zone can't be better than what we saw last night? It's time for robot umps. Question two.
Number two.
Another thing I was frustrated with, there was only 9,000 people in the stands last night, and it felt like 7,500 were Dodgers fans. Uh-huh. So have Dodgers fans become the newest version of Red Sox fans?
In terms of traveling to games?
In terms of coming out of the woodwork and, like, you weren't a Dodgers fan 10 months ago.
Yeah.
What are you doing wearing Dodger blue?
Yes, they are. They are the new Red Sox fans. If that is what you're talking about, then absolutely. I think that there are a lot of passionate Dodgers fans out there, but there are major, major bandwagon LA fans, no doubt about that.
What I assumed it was, and no doubt. I don't mean to slight, no, actually I do mean to slight Dodgers fans, is I assumed that there were a lot of people here in Seattle that, because it's such a transient city as far as jobs go, particularly with tech, I assume there's tons of people here from California all the time. So it's like, are you a hardcore Dodgers fan, or are you just someone that moved up here and you're like, yeah, I'll go to this game? But who cares? I mean, it's your team. Go watch it. I don't really care as much. I think Blue Jays fans still annoy me.
Oh,
more.
Man.
That's Dodgers brutal. Fans, like, it doesn't really touch Blue Jays fans for me. Like, I remember trying to celebrate my birthday out at a bar in Cap Hill, and it was overrun by Blue Jays fans. And I was like, this is the worst. Like, I hate this.
I will grant Dodgers fans this. Their team doesn't come to Seattle very often, probably
right.
Once every 3 or 4 years. So I guess showing out for them is good, but holy cow. They overran the ballpark last night.
It was crazy.
Number three.
If you've been following this whole European Super League drama that's going on, all the big club teams pulling out of their leagues to join this one, well, it looks like some teams are backtracking. We have got, Chelsea and Manchester City have pulled out now. So there's only 10 teams.
Oh, I didn't know Man City did.
Yeah, that just happened. So what's something you were hyped for that you immediately regretted?
I mean, immediately that comes to mind is Ezekiel Ansah.
Oh, no.
Ziggy Ansah coming here in town. I was hyped.
You were so excited.
I was hyped about that one. Oof. That was bad. That was really, really bad.
Something I was really hyped for that I immediately regretted. Nothing's coming to mind. I think maybe it's because Jake just got back from vacation. I'm immediately thinking, like, did I ever jump in a pool that was too cold or anything like that where I was really excited for something that backfired or, like, eat something that I was allergic to? Nothing's coming to mind immediately. I think the Ansah one is a perfect example. Curtis, can you think of anything?
Man. Maybe the Mariners 13-2 start a couple years ago.
That's a really good one.
We were shouting about a possible World Series berth, and then
that's right.
Okay,
a couple weeks later,
Bogey was the greatest thing to ever live.
Still, weirdest batting stance I've seen. I will say, for that start. Danny O'Neill wrote a column at the time looking at the first like 14 or 15 games for every single World Series team or the outcomes for seasons of every team that had the same start the Mariners did. And it was uncanny how many of them went on to be playoff teams. Like the fact that the Mariners didn't is kind of like that unfortunate distinction they hold for the $100 million payroll with 100 losses.
Yeah, they were the first team to ever do that.
It's just something where, or in the, what was it, the 2000, not 2005 draft, what was the draft where they took the catcher third overall?
That was the 05 draft.
05, and the first like eight picks ended up being All-Stars. It's kind of like that, where most of the time it worked out for everyone else but you.
Oh, 253 yes. Says Google Plus. Remember their social media site?
Oh, I do.
Where yes. You can put people into circles. That was a ride.
That was a
you know
disaster.
What I was excited for that absolutely didn't backfire? How about the opposite? Something you didn't think would be good that ended up being phenomenal? Speaking of circles, The Circle on Netflix,
yes.
Weirdly addictive show.
I knew you were going to pull it back to that.
Absolutely.
As soon as
new episodes tomorrow.
As we talked about right. Circles, that was gonna be it.
All right, I have a question that we're all going to answer here. So that means you guys listening right now, I want you to text in 710-710. Here's my question for you all, and you, Jake, and you, Curtis. What's the least sustainable part of the Mariners right now? But wait, there's a twist. And what argument could you make where that thing doesn't end up hurting this team too badly? That's coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Marco Gonzalez, Kyle Lewis, and the Mariners go for a series sweep against the Dodgers today at 1:10 p.m. Pre-game show immediately follows us at noon on 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Now, I asked both of you guys and also texters, what's the least sustainable part of the Mariners right now? And because I don't want to be a negative Nancy, it's a fun start to the season. Everyone's excited. They're first place in the AL West. Here's the twist to it. I want you to tell me an argument as to why that won't end up just like crushing this team. For instance, Jake, you and Curtis had the same answer.
Yeah, we did.
I think
just to show how connected we are, even
okay.
While I'm
wow.
on vacation,
wow, wow,
Curtis
wow.
and I are on the same wavelength, just immediately.
You could put an ocean between us, but
you could.
It's not going
to
work.
The Pacific right. Ocean, to be exact, and it would not stop us. But we did come up with the same idea of the bullpen. The bullpen seems to be right now the thing that you could point to in terms of the obvious thing that is the least sustainable, or the thing that you would eventually expect this bullpen to fall back down to earth, because right now they are ascending towards the heavens. They have been so unbelievably good. Curtis, how good have they been?
Well, the pace they're on is just—it's stupid. Let's be honest. 22 consecutive scoreless innings. On Sunday, they pitched 5 no-hit innings against the Astros. That's not sustainable. Like that is—you cannot go an entire season without allowing a run. That's just stupid to even anticipate. But if they do go, let's say they're an average bullpen the rest of the way, that is still a little bit of a regression towards the mean. But it's not a regression to the point where they're costing you games. It's not to the point where it's the 2020 bullpen where right. the Mariners were, you know, after about the sixth inning, mm-hmm. it was hold on tight because this is going to get really hairy here. You know, maybe there is a guy or two in that bullpen right now that makes you feel that way. Rafael Montero.
Curtis.
Can't get over Rafael Montero.
I want everyone to know.
I was so close to texting you guys last night
oh.
when I was watching. Rafael Montero was on his way to blowing that game last
oh, yeah.
night. Firmly. Like, it was on its way. And then you had unbelievable defensive play to end the night and to get him out of that jam. That was incredible. But I was so close to texting Curtis just to fire him up.
I'm going to read. We can get back to the bullpen. I want to just put at least one more in your guys' minds from listeners. So the 253 says, the least sustainable part feels like living and dying by the home run. They did get, I think, 3 runs via home run the other day. However, I can see this team relearning how to manufacture runs if guys like Taylor Trammell and Evan White start to put the ball into play more often.
I could see that. I mean, you need to round out this lineup, right? I mean, that is obvious. You cannot rely on the unbelievable play of Ty France, who, remember when everybody kind of gave me grief when I said that he's got some Edgar Martinez stuff to him? Like, there's just something about him, his swing. Everybody was like, Jake, you cannot say that, right? Edgar Martinez is the man. It was.
You're on radio, Jake. It was blasphemous.
And Edgar Martinez is my favorite Mariner of all time. So I don't say that with irreverence. But Ty France has been unbelievable. Mitch Haniger has been so fun to watch at this point. He has returned fully back to his all-star self, and not just at the plate, but all the defensive plays that he is making out there in right field has been incredible. But I do believe that this lineup will continue to keep getting better. Trammell steps up, has a nice night for you last night. Marmolejos, hey, he came out and hit a dinger. But more importantly, I think Kyle Lewis getting him back is going to be a huge thing for you, for this team. Getting Jared Kelnick up eventually, I think, will add another boost. So overall, I'm not as concerned with how it's played out with the lineup, because I do think it's going to improve and get better as the season goes on.
We have a couple texters saying Evan White's bat, but obviously that glove saves him, and it's looking pretty dang good. Also, he's looked better. He's definitely improved. 509 says, late game comebacks as the least sustainable thing. Jake, I know that was kind of like your second pick behind the bullpen, and they said, as far as the argument for how it won't crush the team, a more stable starting rotation with a solid bullpen. So to Curtis's point, even if the bullpen just kind of becomes average again, if you see continued improvement, if Marco Gonzalez starts to stabilize and be the guy you know he can be after two rough starts, he bounced back with his last start. We'll see how he does today against a really tough lineup with the Dodgers. That's really encouraging. If the bullpen continues to stay pretty solid, that's encouraging. And that's when you get a little less nervous about those late game comebacks, like this texter saying, because you've got guys that are, you know, helping to limit some of the runs the other guys are getting.
Right. And that's true. I mean, what has happened right now, it's been feast or famine. And you have been in a situation where basically you've just waited. If you're the Mariners, you've been waiting to get through the starting pitching for the opposing team. And you've also been waiting to get through your own starting pitcher through you know, the fifth, fourth, sixth inning, and start getting to the bullpen. And that's when they've started to really turn it on in terms of their bats, and also the pitching has improved in late into the game. So I don't think that that's going to be sustainable over the long haul here. But I think that in order for them to continue to keep at this pace, to continue to be at the top of the division, you need to see more games sprinkled in there like we saw last night versus the Dodgers, where you do get up to an early lead and be able to give yourself some cushion. I think that all those things are really important for the Mariners, and I do think that that will happen once your top of the lineup is fully rounded out and it is lengthened, when you get Kyle Lewis and you get Kelnick and you have Mitch Haniger, Ty France, Kyle Lewis, you know, Seager. You've got Kelnick, you've got Evan White that's hitting better over the last seven games. So I do have higher expectations for this group as a whole to get started earlier.
And don't overlook great defense, right? Like, it's kind of seen as an add-on sometimes of like, he's not doing well, but the defense is great. Like, great defense yesterday is also what saved you that game, particularly that catch by Dylan Moore, which very likely saved
incredible.
You a run.
Evan White.
But then Evan White making a phenomenal catch. J.P. Crawford, he wasn't part of like a highlight, but he had a couple good plays in there. Now, there is an important text on here, Jake, I need you to know about. From the 425, not a Mariners question, but an important one. Who's this guy talking on the Stacey and Curtis show? Is he a guest host?
We brought in some random guy today.
It's his name's Jake.
John.
Jake.
John.
I wasn't gone
here
that long, okay? I'm back, all right?
Jake,
I am back.
Do we know a Jake, Curtis?
Now, I want to put out a challenge to Mariners Twitter. Mariners Twitter, Stacey. Things that are least likely to maintain. The fire memes that we've been seeing.
Oh, yeah, you need to keep it up.
Are we going to see that maintained throughout the season? I don't know. We'll see.
Nothing,
but they have been unbelievable, and I have loved every second of it.
Nothing makes me feel younger and hipper than understanding a meme. Like, it's, I feel
it's
powerful.
Like, oh, I get that.
I get it. I get it. All right. This has been Jake, I think. Jake, you said your name's Jake?
Yes.
Jake and Stacy. Obviously with Curtis Rogers on the board. Do not go anywhere because the Mariners pregame show is going to start right after us, and we're very excited to see if they can get this sweep of the Dodgers. Kyle Lewis is back. Marco Gonzalez gets the start. Mariners pregame coming up next on 710 ESPN Seattle.